Good morning.
Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians 5. You know, I was really excited that I, not for the reason that I got to teach Wednesday night, because Callahan's going through some tough times with his family, but, you know, I got to fill in and teach, and it helps me because I get to control what was taught, right? So I knew exactly how far I wanted to go in the book, and I was really worried whoever Callahan being here, that he might sneak into my text. And so with me getting to teach, it worked out rather nicely. So we're going to be looking at verses 14 through 21 when you get to 2 Corinthians 5. I wanted to remind you the Wadsworths are having a devotional small group tonight, John chapter 1. Would love to invite you to come be a part of that. Great study, a little bit more of a discussion, and some really good teaching. I know Kelly's going to be doing the teaching on that. So John chapter 1, you might get through four verses, maybe, if you're lucky. Knowing Kelly, maybe one. But yeah, too aggressive. One would be about right. Also, Fall Festivus is coming, right? It's our annual downhill derby, chili cook-off, dessert contest, I mean, costume contest, all that stuff. You'll get to see what the preteens and the teens helped work on, our cool treehouse and all that good fun stuff. So we want to invite you to come out to the house. The weather's supposed to be fairly cool, so we'll have a fire and maybe two fires, and depending on how many teenagers show up, maybe a big bonfire, and they can burn all the stuff I've been piling up and can have a good time doing that. Of course, Luke looked up. He's like, fire? I want to burn. I saw that face. He's like, fire? Whoa, wait. So we have a big fire. You know, Luke can be in charge, and so you can burn anything that you can get your hands on. How about that? Does that sound good? That's good stuff. All right. It's not really a lesson on gossip, but I do have a cute story, because there's this little old lady named Mildred, right? That's an older name. I don't guess I know any younger aged people named Mildred. But Mildred is known as the church gossip, right? Everybody knows she is. It's a small town. It's a small church. But she just has a tendency to be a little bit of a gossip. Well, no, she's a lot of a gossip. And everybody knows it, and nobody likes it. But they're also kind of afraid to say anything to her about it, right? Because then they'll get talked about. And so this old guy named George moves into town, and he starts coming to church. He's a widower. He's kind of on his own. He's really quiet, very soft-spoken, doesn't talk a whole lot. And within a month, Mildred spreads a rumor that George is an alcoholic. And George is like, where did that come from? And so Mildred eventually accosts him at church one morning. Said, I can't believe that you represent Jesus, mine, and on and on and on about him. And he's like, really quietly just goes, I don't understand. She goes, I saw your truck parked out in front of a liquor store. And, you know, he kind of has that look, which, I mean, no one even knows what he does for a living. And she just jumps to conclusions. So George, he never says another word. He just kind of looks at her and walks away. So later that night, George parks his car in front of Mildred's house and leaves it there all night. Let some folks start talking, right? We have a tendency, you know, in our culture, to share bad news. You know, you can stand in front of the Walmart lines. I mean, we usually do the self-checkout, so I don't have to go through those lines anymore. But, you know, there's magazine articles and there's magazines that's all they do. There's television shows. They focus on the negative. They would rather find some dirt. They'd rather find some filth on somebody. And even if it's not true and they think there's a semblance of truth to it, they'll go ahead and print it. Because we as a people, we love to repeat bad news sometimes, you know. And we use this word occasionally, compelled. You know, you'll see a newspaper. Well, I felt it was my job to tell the story. You know, I felt really compelled. The word compelled actually has a little bit more weight to it. Instead of just simply saying something along the lines of, well, I'd like to tell you a little bit about, you know, a story. We say, well, I feel compelled. There is. And that word actually does have a little bit more force to it. It means I'm required to, or I can't not tell you this, right? I can't not tell you this. And there are, Hunter, would you pass those out? There's actually cardboard thingy jobbers. I know a couple of you have them, but I usually see about three or four people holding them. So if Hunter, if you don't mind doing that, that's one of the answers. I cannot, you know, I can't not tell you this. You just feel that urge to say something. It reminds me of Peter and John in Acts chapter 4. I don't know if you remember the story, but in Acts chapter 3, Peter heals a lame man. And because of that healing, it creates a little bit of a ruckus, right? It creates a little bit of an excitement. And so Peter and John start preaching about this resurrected Jesus. And the Sadducees that are there, they don't like the preaching because they don't believe in the resurrection. So they have a problem with that. And some of the priests and some of the Jews are struggling with that. And so they take Peter and John in Acts chapter 4 and they throw them into prison for speaking about and preaching about this resurrected Jesus. And so when Peter and John get out of prison the next day, they start doing a little bit more preaching. They're called in. They're having this conversation. And Peter says, or gets to this point, he says, then they called them in again and commanded them not to speak or teach at all in the name of Jesus. Then Peter and John said, which is right in God's eyes, to listen to you or to him? You be the judges. As for us, we cannot help speaking about what we've seen and heard. That's got weight to it. We can't help it. We feel compelled to tell the story. We have to say this. I can't not tell you. And so you be the judge, they tell them, as to whether or not we should speak for God or do what you ask us to do. But as for us, it's almost that Joshua thing. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. As for me and John, we're going to teach about Jesus. We have to tell the story. 2 Corinthians 5:14 says, for Christ's love compels us. Right? I have to tell you this story. I have to explain to you about the things that are important, right? Because of the context, and I'm going to get to reading the whole thing, 2 Corinthians 5:17 talks about this new creation. If Austin was here this morning, right, I would hold Austin up and we'd sing the Caterpillar song right about now, right? It's such a great chapter. And I talked about renewal and metamorphosis and change and stuff just a couple of lessons ago. So I could have taken this verse, you know, right, 2 Corinthians 5:17, and simply preached from it. But I'm thinking part of this new creation, right, that takes place, this metamorphosis that happens, is this idea that now we understand that something's different. That there's this love that we have not experienced before, that we've not been able to understand before. And as we continue to grow in that understanding and in that love, we simply want to repeat and tell the story, right? Now, the message, you know, has become my favorite thing to read lately. I don't know. I love the message. And so I like the way Peterson does things. And the more I look at the Greek words, I see that Peterson has taken a more modern day approach and just simply used the words that make more sense. Right. And so here's what he says, verses 17 through 20. Now we look inside, right? We look inside our hearts, so to speak. And what we see is that anyone united with the Messiah gets a fresh start, is created new. The old life is gone. A new life burgeons. Look at it. All this comes from the God who settled the relationship between us and him and then called us to settle our relationships with each other. God put the world square with himself through the Messiah, giving the world a fresh start by offering forgiveness of sins. God has given us the task of telling everyone what he's doing. We're Christ's representatives. God uses us to persuade men and women to drop their differences and enter into God's work of making things right between them. I love Peterson's use of this settle our relationships or putting the world square with himself. We would use the word reconcile, although we don't use that word as often as we used to, right? To reconcile. It's not used as often, but we reconcile our checking accounts. Now, I don't know how many of you guys actually balance your checkbook every month. You still do that? Seriously? Okay, a couple of us. So that's crazy. With this, all this online and everything I get is the same way. I have a cash management account with Merrill Lynch, and they do a great job keeping records and stuff. But I have caught them once making a mistake because I balance mine to the penny every month. I'm a numbers person. I've made mistakes too, but I've caught them once. So I called him. And I was like, "Hey, I got a problem here." And so, you know, we sell it. And they go, "Wow, that's one of the few times that happens because it was an online transaction and all this other stuff." But anyway, I was like, "Sweet." But I get to the bottom of it, and I'm reconciling my checkbook. That's literally the words that need to be used because we're balancing it. We're making things right. We're making things even, so to speak. The word in Greek literally means to destroy enmity, right? To make friendly again, to bring together in agreement, to bring together in harmony, or to settle our differences. So regardless of their statement in my checkbook, right, and what we have, I mean, it's even better when I have a certain amount of money and they say I have more. Like, oh, that's a really good thing. Now, what I don't like is when I get my statement and I have this amount of money and they say I have less. And it's like, oh, now we're going to really go over to this one. But I always settle the differences. All right, I find harmony in my account and literally have done so for 35, 40 years. I mean, balance the checkbook every single month to equal it out. The problem is, see, is we can't balance our sinfulness. Right? We can't make it even with God. At least we can't by ourselves. Right? How do I reconcile this huge debt to God? I can't. Because I owe a debt I cannot pay. Right? He paid a debt he didn't owe. And so I owe this debt that I can't reconcile it. I can't balance it. I can't make peace. I can't make enmity or fix this enmity between me and God. But only God can do that, and God chose to do that through Christ. And I love the fact that Jesus is the reconciler, right? He stands between us and brings us together and says, now we're going to have a great conversation, and we're going to balance the life that you have, and I'm going to make peace forever. He is the mediator. Look at 1 Timothy 2, 5 and 6. He's the bridge, right? We're on one side and God's on the other, and we've got to kind of get together. And the only way to do that is through Jesus. And so Paul says to Timothy, for there's one God, one mediator between God and mankind, the man Christ Jesus, who gave himself as a ransom for all people. Right? And so we have this kind of dual lesson this morning. We're compelled to reconcile. We're compelled to reconcile. What does it mean to be compelled? It means there's a strong force behind it. I got to tell you. I've just got to tell you. And so sometimes we get in the life we live and we forget, hey, we have this great story to tell. We have this incredible story to tell. We should share that story. But how do we tell the story? Well, I'm going to tell you this morning, any way you can. Right? There's no formula for sharing the story. You just need to share the story. D.L. Moody is an old-time evangelist, and he goes back a ways. Strong preacher, one of the hellfire and brimstone kind of guys. He was a little rough around the edges, and yet he was this evangelist that just went out and just told the story. And sometimes he did it a little roughly. Well, he was called to the table by this lady. And she says, you know, Mr. Moody, I really don't like the way that you brought the message. I think it's just a little bit overbearing, and sometimes it really rubs people the wrong way. And he says, you know, I don't like the way I bring the message sometimes either. But you know, if you've got a better way, tell me, how do you spread the message? How do you tell the story? Well, she had to confess, well, I really don't tell the story. And he says, well, then I like my way way better than I like your way. Because at least I'm doing something. Now, any way, right, any way to tell a story is better than no way. So I want to give you an invitation, right, to tell a story. And your story is very simply, just invite them to the banquet. It's a great thing. Turn to Luke chapter 14, verses 16 through 24. You know, we love to eat, right? As a nation, we love to eat. As a people, we love to eat. As a congregation, we love to eat, right? Well, I just invited you to come Saturday. I invited you tonight. You know, hey, bring some food, bring some snacks, bring some drinks. You know, even if there's not food there, you can bring your own food because we like to eat, right? And so here you have this incredible parable. And Jesus is talking here, of course, and he's reminding us that we simply just invite people to a banquet. It's a pretty cool banquet. Jesus replied, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, 'I've just bought a field and I must go see it. Please excuse me.' Another said, 'I've just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me.' Still another said, 'I just got married, so I can't come.' The servant came back, reported this to his master. The owner of the house became angry, ordered his servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town, bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame.' 'Sir,' the servant said, 'what you order has been done. We already did it. But there's still room.' Then the master told his servant, 'Then go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in, so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those,'" and here's what I think Jesus is doing. I think Jesus is pointing to all the Jews who've chosen not to show up, because that's who he's really talking about. They were invited, they were coddled, they were loved, they were protected, you know, by God himself. They were his people, and then Jesus kind of shows up and they don't want to come to his banquet, right? So I think he's pointing. That's just me and my interpretation. He says, "I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet," because they didn't accept him. The ones who accept him, who believe in him, then he gives them the right to go to the ticket. How do I know? Look at John 1, 11 through 13. There's a ticket to the banquet, right? And it's not paid for by us. It's paid for by Christ. That's the way it works. Look what it says in John 1. He says, "He came to that," which I don't know if Kelly's going to get that far or not, "but he came to that which was his own." See, that's verse 11. See, what we got? October, November, December, maybe February. "He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him." So he comes to those who is his own people. "Yet to all who do receive him," it says, "to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." Children not born of natural descent, not of human decision, not of a husband's will, but literally born of God. To be reconciled with God simply means I just accept the invitation to go to the banquet. There's a banquet table spread out and ready to go. And so I tell people all the time, it's like, hey, you know, you got invited to a banquet. You know, what kind of a dinner is that? Well, it's a heavenly banquet. Oh, well, you're going to preach to me. I'm not preaching anything. I'm just telling you, there's a banquet. I just want to invite you to go to the banquet. Ticket's paid for. You don't have to do anything. Well, yeah, you do. You have to accept the ticket, right? And listen and pay attention to what God asks you to do. It's not a physical birth. It's a spiritual birth, right? We get this new body, a new creation, this banquet, all this kind of cool stuff. We talked about that Wednesday night, about this new body. But I love this. Look at 1 John 3:1. And this is what I get excited about. "See what great love the Father has lavished on us." Right? This is what the banquet's all about. It's this incredible party that God has created for those who receive his Son. Right? "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are." Isn't that a great story? I mean, that's a great story. So we should be compelled to share it, because we should be compelled to reconcile. Right? Because there's a reconciliation that has to take place. We don't like, again, we don't use that word very often, but we need to balance this relationship between our sinfulness and God's righteousness. So God says, "I'll send my Son. He dies so that you can be reconciled to me, so you can reconcile others, and I'll give you that ministry of helping people understand this reconciliation takes place through Jesus Christ." Ephesians 3, 16 through 19. Right, I don't know how Paul would have spoken this prayer, because it's kind of a prayer to the church at Ephesus. I mean, he writes it down, but I can see Paul being a little bit more livid and excited when he says, "I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith." Why? "Because I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the Lord's holy people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know that this love surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. I think that once we understand the power of this love, it's not anything that we do. It's not anything that we do. It's not our power. It's this power of love. I mean, that's what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5. He's not talking about anything that he can do. He says it's just Christ's love compels us. When we get to the depth of his love and the width of his love and the height of his love, he says when you totally understand it, it'll be so easy. You can't help but share it. It's just good news. It's great news. And Paul couldn't say it any better than how it's said in Romans 5. And I appreciate Ben reading that this morning. Ben, you did a great job. I gave you probably the longest verse that had to be read in probably 2 or 3 months, but you did a great job. But look what he says. Paul again is talking. It's almost the exact same thing. He says, you see, at just the right time, this is the best part of the story, when we were powerless, and we just read in Ephesians that the power comes through the Spirit, the power comes through the knowledge of this love, when we were powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Now pause that for a second. Now we've all got sin in our life. And we all have sin in our life that we go, oh, if there's one thing for sure that I could overcome, if I could have a do-over, you know, go back to a time in your life where you think, that's the worst thing that I've done, or that's the thing that I feel is the worst thing I've ever done to God. At that moment in time, I want you to put yourself in that place and realize that Christ looks down on that moment in your life and says, even at that moment, I died for you. It wasn't because you're a good person. It isn't because you're sitting here on Sunday morning listening to a sermon when you could have been sleeping or being outside or doing anything else. He says, I loved you at your worst moment. I know you needed grace. And so I loved you then. And that's the great part of the love that is talked about here. Since we've now, he says, so while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since we've now been justified, right, by his blood, how much more shall we be saved from God's wrath through him? For if, while we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life? Right? So we were enemies and got reconciled. So then when we accept him, he says, well, I'm going to reconcile you for sure through the life that I'm giving you. Not only is this so, but we also boast in God. And I want to say that because we feel compelled to talk about this gift through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received this reconciliation. So we boast, we proclaim, we are compelled to tell the story. And it's not a negative story. It's not the bad news. It's not the horrible stuff. It's not the stuff that you see, you know, on the National Enquirer when you stand in front of Walmart line, right? All this junk and garbage and things. This is a good news. This is not a, you know, misunderstood word. It's a great word, compelled by the love of Christ. So, the good news in simple form, right? Good news in simple form. John 3:16. I mean, if you know, go there. If you want to share a story, say, I just want to share one verse with you. You know, write it down and hand it to people. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. In a nutshell, there's the good news. There's the invitation. Because of his love for us, he gave his son for us, so that we might not have death, but we might have life. Right? That's the compelling story. There's being a banquet thrown for all, and you're invited. And some people don't know they're invited to the banquet. You know, have you ever gone someplace? I mean, Karen gets really mad at me because I'll go around and tell people, it's like, hey, by the way, there's free stuff over there. And she's like, Mike, let the people that are selling it give it away. Because I'm like, if somebody's giving something away or I got something for free, it's just in my nature to go, oh, did you not know that they're giving free stuff away? Yeah, I remember when they started doing the Coke lids. You remember that? Oh, yeah, here we go. Shake your head. They started doing these Coke lids with the codes on them. At first, you only needed 8 lids to get a free 20-ounce drink. Just 8 lids. So I remember the kids, when we first moved here, and after a football game, we brought Walmart sacks. And I'd go, okay, for the next 10 minutes, you guys go find lids for me. And they're like, Dak, please, no. And I'm like, every 8 lids you find, we get a free drink. And so they're picking them up. I'm picking them all up. And I'm like, excuse me, are you done with your drink? No. And I'm like, do you want the lid? You know, they're like, yeah, I want the lid. I'm sorry. Because I don't know if you know this or not, but if you get 8 of those, you get a free 20. Oh, really? You know, they act really interested. And then on the back of, you know, they leave, they go, oh, that guy's crazy. Right? But I mean, anything that was free to me was exciting. And so I would tell people about it. And Karen would get embarrassed because I would go through the store and go, hey, by the way, there's free stuff over there. And if you buy one of those, you get one of those free. And they're like, okay, you know, do you work here? No, just telling you the story, right? It's free. Okay. I love free stuff. And so I'm compelled because I love free stuff. And to me, it blows my mind that Christ died for us for free. You know? And there's this term cheap grace, and I really don't like the terminology, but I understand the thoughts behind it. Because there's nothing cheap about the grace, I understand that completely. But it's a free gift. It's a free gift. And we accept it, right? And with accepting it, there's this lordship and there's this, you know, obedience, and all those things come with it. But the alternative is astounding. You know, it's like, hey, you get eternal life, you get to hang out with God, you get a free banquet, he prepares this great place for you, you get this new body, you get this new life, you get all of this great stuff, right, with obedience. Or you can rot in hell forever. Your choice, you know. To me, that's not even an understanding. So we need to share the story. Now, hey, by the way, you know there's a banquet. Hey, by the way, God loved you so much. He gives you a ticket to paradise. And to me, if we're going to repeat any kind of news, let's repeat good news. I mean, that's going to be the news we need to repeat. And I think that's special this morning. So, compelled to reconcile. We've been given this gift of reconciliation. And it simply comes with an invitation to let people know about the story, that there's a banquet, that there's something better than the life that they have now. We're going to sing a song. I don't know if you're struggling with anything in your life right now. Just want to encourage you to tell a story.